Blog Talk Radio.
Seats, a house full of love, a great place to grow. Once upon a long time ago, if only I could go back again to Mom and Dad and all of my friends, I would feel safe with the people I know from once upon a long time ago. I'll never fly off to Neverland. I'll never travel in time. All I can do is the best I can and go there in my mind. So I close my eyes, imagine I'm there, hide and seek, musical chairs, hot summer nights, and the cool winter snow, from once upon a long time ago. Smile as I look back on roads I've crossed, traveling down memory lane. But without all of those that I loved and lost, life is not the same. For all the good times I can recall, to all I've loved, God bless you all. The happiest moments that I'll ever know were once upon a long time ago.
Travel back to those days a long time ago, as I'm sure you do if you're my age. Good afternoon, folks. It's a radio talk show and the Eastern Airlines Radio on the air live with another episode of what we call Airline Talk News and History. We call it the Airline Radio Hour now, and are bringing you stories from here and there, one airline to another, with live conversation. My name is Neil Holland. I'm a retired captain with Eastern Airlines, and I'm the producer of the show. And if you listening in on the show's website, some of you are, especially those from around the world, but our website is our call-in number, computer address is www.blogtalkradio.com. /Captain Eddie, that's CAPTEDDIE. And if you're listening to us at the Blog Talk Radio site, and you'd like to call in and talk with our guest, our host, or just to add your memories to our show, then why not call us? You can call us on 213-816-1611. I'll see your number on the show's callers board, and I'll open your microphone up and just make your comment or add to what we're talking about. Ask that you can join the host as we go through the program. Again, make a note of that call-in number now, and visit with us every week if you can at 1 o'clock on Saturdays. It's 213-816-1611. A lot of you don't know, but those especially first-time call-ins, but we're a satellite-based radio station. In other words, we don't have a tower fixed to Earth. Instead, we are heard around the world. As a matter of fact, we have listeners in over 50 countries now. And I see last week we picked up Uzbekistan, Puerto Rico, and Croatia with listeners. That's what a broadcasting antenna of over 22,000 miles above the Earth reaches. In other words, the world. We reach out to the world. And it's live. Let's repeat the number again. If you'd like to add your comments to our listening audience, then why not call us now? 213-816-1611. We're looking for your number on my board. When we see your area code on the producer's board, we'll welcome you, and you can add your comments and come on and make the call. So this is a different format. This is the first time we've done this. Well, we did it a while back, about 5 years ago. We ran a series called The Big Bands. I love to listen to the big bands because that's my era. Was back during the 40s and 50s and even the 30s, actually. But so we're doing the big bands, but we are also adding an airline each week to the discussion. And this week I've chosen National Airlines, which was basically right across the street from Eastern. And that's the airline that I work for. And so we're doing National today, and probably next week we'll do Northwest or some other airline that I've come up with. And I like the theme music or whatever brings me to that airline. And we'll put it along with the big bands. Now, let's see. I've got a couple of call-ins right now, and I'm going to find out who is listening to us. I've got area code 803, and I'm going to open your microphone up as I click you on here. Let's see. I know who 803 is. It's Jerry. Hello, Jerry. How you doing?
I'm fine, Neil. Great to be with you.
Good. Just tell me real quickly, where are you calling from, Jerry?
Camden, South Carolina, which is about 20 miles
east
of Columbia.
You wouldn't know where it is. Okay, and area code 912. Who's 912?
That's Derek.
Derek. Hello, Derek.
I'm a former Eastern pilot, Derek Duke, living just outside Savannah.
Outside Savannah. Well, you're not too far from me. I'm here in St. Augustine. So, yeah, we're just right up I-95 is where you are. So good to have you with us, Derek. I've been watching your name and your comments on Facebook. Thanks for tuning us in today. And Jim Harris usually works with me and Jim Holder. Sometimes they appear on the show. And Jim's birthday is today. Happy birthday, Jim, if you're listening. I know you called two times, and I don't know what's wrong with your phone, but you're not with us. So at any rate, perhaps during the show, you'll be able to show up sometime. Now, we're going to play a little big band music, and we're going to talk about National Airline a little bit. And at the end of each one of these discussions, we'd like to have your comments if you know anyone that worked for National, or if you're from National. Hang on a second. That's Jim Harris. I'm going to find out what's wrong with him right now. Jim, I'm on the air right now. What's wrong with you? No, you need to call in. Your number's just not appearing on my producer's board. So I don't know what's going on. Try to figure it out. So I'm going to keep on into the show here. I got folks listening to us. So call, yeah, just call into the show. Don't call me at my home. Call in at 213-816-1611. Yeah, good. Now that's what you call getting old, folks, because he's been with me for several years now, and I'm still trying to tell him how to do it. So it's not all that hard. It's area code 213-816-1611. And I was telling Jerry earlier before we went on the air, I call this kitchen table radio, and that's basically what it is. And but we have fun here, and apparently people like it because we've got, like I said earlier, we've got 50 countries around the world that we've identified that tune us in regularly. I mean, like China, we've got South Korea, Uzbekistan. I can't even pronounce some of the words of the countries, but 50 of them have tuned us in. Probably one person in China listens to us regularly. We've had Russia listens into us. So we're getting around the world with that 22,000 mile above the earth antenna. Any comments right now before we start talking about the big bands? Jerry, would you want to make a quick comment? And Derek?
Well, this is my first time listening, Neil, and I'm just looking forward to it. Derek mentioned that he's in Savannah, so I'm up in South Carolina, and you know a little bit about my story of flying 20 years with Eastern and having a heart attack in second day of captain school in 1988, and had to go. I've had two double bypass and a five-way bypass since then, and I'm 85 in September, so I'm doing pretty well, but went into a completely different industry.
You are doing good. What industry is that?
A fellow that I was a neighbor of mine in Atlanta, I actually ended up, he had a little business in the outdoor power equipment aftermarket, and I ended up being hired by a supplier that he had a rep agreement with because he passed away a couple of years after I got involved with him. And I ended up being national sales manager for a company that we produced power transmission belts for the lawn and garden industry, and made all the belts that were going on, like the Craftsman mowers, which really exploded in the 90s. And woman had an idea, the marketing director, of taking that particular belt that you'd sell in Sears for all the mowers, the $50 belt, and I would take it out to the aftermarket distributors that would be selling it to your mom and pop stores, lawn and garden dealers, the same belt with a different brand, and for about a third the price, and as it turned out, I ended up selling millions of dollars worth of those things, and not only was in the industry about 20-some years, served on the board of directors of the Trade Association, and met a lot of great people. I was dealing with the principals of these companies and manufacturers, and people like Briggs & Stratton and Snapper and Aaron and so forth like that. I had never sold a thing in my life, and I worked till I was 79.
Well, you sold yourself to Eastern Airlines, obviously. So, Derek, I want to find out about you up there in Savannah. What's happening up the road up there in Savannah? What are you doing now? And who are you with, Eastern?
Oh, no. Hey, Neil, it's a pleasure. I really appreciate what you do to put this show on the air. I hope that your popularity regains maximum strength and it spreads. I thought you had gone away there for a little bit, but I'm glad that you haven't.
Well, I did. I signed off, and I said after 13 years, I was I was going to retire, and I hit sheer boredom when I did that. I mean, it was just terrible. I helped my wife. She's in dementia. But at any rate, I just didn't have anything to do. And I said, shoot, I'm going to come back and do something different. And so here we are, and we're doing a little bit about the airlines now. But, hey, listen, let me play one of these big bands for you guys, and then we'll talk some more. We'll talk a little bit about the National Airlines because that's what we're going to focus in on. See if you like this song. I really like it, and I'm sure you guys danced to it. I did. Here it is, Tommy Dorsey, I think. Tommy Dorsey with Boogie Woogie. You guys remember Boogie Woogie?
I remember hearing it, but I was a little young then.
Okay. Now, let's talk about National a little bit. See if you guys know anybody at National Airlines, but I do, and I was going to talk about that a little bit later on, my association with National Airlines. But National was founded by George T. Baker. And he died in 1963, but it was founded in 1934, and its headquarters were in St. Petersburg, Florida. I didn't know that. And it was based at the city's Albert Whitted Airport. I know where that is. And on October 15th of that year, the revenue flights were launched and transporting passengers and mail from St. Pete to a few destinations within Florida using a fleet of two Ryan 51 monoplanes. In 1935, the Stinson Trimotor was introduced with National, which were soon replaced by the Lockheed Model 10 Electra in 1939. And then the company, now here's something I really didn't know, the company had moved its headquarters from Tampa over to Jacksonville, Florida, where I am. And by the end of the decade, the National Airlines network spanned from Miami to New Orleans and on what it called, it was known as the Buccaneer Airline, the Buccaneer route, the Buccaneers. So that was the first decade that they were in business. Now, here's another one that you might have heard by Benny Goodman. I'm going to play this one by Benny Goodman. All of us know who Benny Goodman is. I know you're old enough to know Benny Goodman, right?
Oh, I knew Tommy Dorsey. I knew who Tommy Dorsey was, too. I just remember doing the Boogie Woogie so much.
Okay. Well, have you ever heard this song called The Jersey Bounce?
Oh, yeah.
All right, here's what it sounded like. We not might not play all of these, but I want to, oh, I know what I was supposed to do. I was supposed to introduce National Airlines with a little music. So let's first play this theme music from National. I always thought Eastern and National had some very good TV commercials. And see if you remember this commercial that National ran throughout the country.
Sure as the sun keeps rising, we keep on rising too, to meet the challenge of your day and warm the way for you. Give you the feel of sunshine, our own special kind. We're National, the Sunshine Airline. Watch us shine, watch us shine.
We're National, the Sunshine Airline. Watch us shine, watch us shine. The Sunshine Airline, watch us shine.
Every face is bright and friendly, every job is done with pride. National means flying on the sunny side.
Watch us shine. When you want someone to help you on your way, flying can be a pleasure. National. Making time to do the special little thing, to take a friendly smile and give it wings. We're National, the Sunshine Airline. Watch us shine, watch us shine. We're the Sunshine Airline. Watch us shine, watch us shine.
TV commercials were the best in the industry, but every one of the airlines back in the day, you don't hear these songs that the airlines chose and had written special music for them, like Eastern and National, the one that you just heard. That's beautiful music, and I'm sure we were proud of our commercials, and National and TWA and all the rest of them were very proud of theirs, and I really like the United songs that United played with theirs and still does. But getting back to National, in 1940, the Lockheed Model 18 Lodestar. Remember, that was a funny looking airplane. It had like a pregnant belly there. You know, it looked like an airplane was dragging its stomach along the runway or taxiway. And But that airplane became the backbone of National's fleet. National was awarded flights from Florida, then to New York City and other cities along the East Coast in 1944, with flights starting in 1945. In 1946, National got approval to fly to Havana, Cuba, which coincided with the introduction of the Douglas DC-4. And the DC-4 allowed nonstop flights between Miami and New York that started up on February of 1946. And later that year, National relocated its headquarters to Miami International Airport. And a maintenance base opened at Miami in 1950. Either you guys remember where the National maintenance base was back in 1950?
Well, I remember the one that was right across by the railroad tracks right on 36th Street.
Bingo. Bingo. You remember when they taxied an airplane from the airport
right
over to the maintenance, they had to lower the gates, stop the cars?
On Lejeune Road.
Yeah, on Lejeune
yeah.
Road. That's right. Yeah. So, yeah, you do have good memory. The Douglas DC-6, National's first pressurized airliner, began flights on July 1st, 1947, and it reduced the New York to Miami flight time from 5 to 4 hours. Flights on the DC-6 were marketed as Star Service, airline of the stars. You remember? That's what they were referring to.
That term I remember.
Yeah. Now, I always thought it was movie stars when they got Hollywood,
yeah,
you know. But at any rate, it was called the Star Service. National ran the Piggy Bank Vacation campaign, promoting low-fare flights to Florida during the off-peak summer season. And now here's one that you probably haven't heard. I'm going to skip the Jersey bounce for now. But I always liked Harry James and his orchestra.
Mm.
Remember Harry James and who he was married
mm-hmm.
to? Anybody?
Betty Grable, wasn't it?
Betty Grable. Now, we probably have to introduce Betty Grable to our young listeners because she was a pinup girl in World War II. Do you remember?
Yep.
Yeah, every soldier had it right there by their bunk. Picture of Betty Grable. I can see it now. But Harry had a band, and he came over from Benny Goodman's band. He was originally with Benny Goodman, and then he came over and got his own. So here's one I bet you haven't heard, and I really like this.
Thank you.
could he play a trumpet.
Yep.
Harry James. You know, back in the 50s over at National Airlines, the decade of the 50s saw the introduction to National of the Convair 340 and the 440. And the Eastern got the 440. We didn't go with the 340, but that's what I started my career with, Eastern, on the Convair 440, wonderful airplane. And National had the Douglas DC-7 and the Lockheed L-1049 Super Constellations. And on December 10th, 1958, National Airlines became the first airline to operate domestic jet flights. They used a Boeing 707 that they leased from Pan American World Airways between Miami and New York. And in 1959, the Lockheed L-188, the Electra, was introduced into the fleet. It was the only turboprop aircraft type ever operated by the airline. At the end of the decade, Houston and Boston were the ends of the network, with heavy emphasis on service between Florida and the U.S. East Coast and the Gulf Coast, meeting directly, of course, with Eastern. Now, let's listen to some swing music by Sammy Kaye. Sammy Kaye, as we remember, he was called the the music was called Swing and Sway with Sammy Kaye. And you might remember this one of Sammy Kaye. Let's see if I can find it. It's called Harbor Lights. Music puts you to sleep.
I remember that one.
Hey, area code 512, who's that?
Hey, it'd be Jim Harris here.
Hey, Jim, did you finally figure it out?
I finally figured it out. It was tough.
Okay. All right. Well, listen, I want to get into the 60s with National Airlines. I want to get through this so we can chat about the airlines, National, and whoever we want to talk about. But in the 60s, National brought on the DC-8, Douglas DC-8s. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about my personal experience with National and that DC-8. But they brought it on to operate between Florida and Los Angeles and San Francisco, with a number of flights stopping in Houston and in New Orleans. And previously, American Airlines and Delta Airlines and National had together operated Douglas DC-6s and 7s through between Miami and California. But in March 1962, National scheduled a round trip from Miami to Los Angeles and on the DC-8. And in the early 1960s, National started a new service with the Lockheed Electra to Las Vegas and San Diego. And eastbound coast-to-coast routes were flown with the Electra, including the San Diego, Los Angeles, Houston, New Orleans, and Miami, San Francisco, and Las Vegas. They were really big time. We were fighting, Eastern was fighting for that route, but National got it above the Eastern, if you remember. It took us another few years before we wound up in California. But National had other long multi-stop routings with the Electra, such as Boston and New York City and Jacksonville, Orlando, Tampa, New Orleans, Houston, Las Vegas, San Francisco. And National operated Flight 223, departed Boston at 7:30 and arrived in San Francisco at 8:42. Bud Maytag, the laundryman, remember Bud Maytag? I don't know whether they made dryers or not, but they sure made washing machines. But he was the grandson of the Maytag Corporation founder, Louis Maytag, who had previously led, I didn't know this, but he led Frontier Airlines. And he bought a majority share in National Airlines and replaced George T. Baker as the CEO. In 1960, the airline modernized its fleet with the new Douglas DC-8s, followed by 10 new Boeing 727-100 Tri-Jets. That's the favorite airplane of Captain Jim Harris.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. The first of which was delivered in 1964. Do you know who got the first delivery of the 727?
United
Eastern,
wasn't it?
Operated,
no,
it?
Eastern Airlines. We were ones to put that in the end. Yes. But after the retirement of the Electras in 1968, National became an all-jet airline with the DC-8 and the 727. The airline introduced the first jet service into Key West, Florida. And in 1968, they did that with the Boeing 727-100. The Douglas DC-8 fleet included the Stretch Super DC-8-61, which was the largest aircraft type operated by the airline until the introduction of a new wide-bodied jetliner, such as the Boeing 747 and the McDonnell Douglas DC-10. In 1969, National flew the Super DC-8 nonstop between Miami and New York Kennedy Airport and nonstop between Miami and Los Angeles, the flights having names such as the Royal Biscayne, the Royal Dolphin, the Gotham, and the Manhattan between Miami, New York, and California, and the Caribbean between Miami and Los Angeles. On July 26, 1969, the Atlanta-San Francisco nonstop route was awarded to National, and service began on October 1st of 69. It was National's only route out of Atlanta. That's the one Eastern was really trying to land, but didn't quite make it. National got it from Atlanta. Okay, well, I'm going to play another one here. We're about to wrap this up for some serious conversation here. So here's one that I like very much, and he's considered the greatest musician with the drums. Anybody know who that was?
Gene Krupa.
Well, I like Gene Krupa. He's number one in my book, but I think the music industry gives Buddy Rich that title. Yeah. He was good. Here he is, Buddy Rich. Thank you. Well, I thought we'd get a little bit more drumming there, but not enough drumming for me. So I'm going to just continue this one. And we'll finish up with National here. But in the 70s, National's million-dollar IBM Electronic Computer Reservation Center, which they call Res-A-Vision, was completed and put into operation in 1970. I think you remember what ours was called? System 1, I believe, with Eastern.
Right.
And,
yeah, it was System 1.
System 1. Well, they call theirs Res-A-Vision. And that was in 1970. And they reintroduced the international flights when their Miami-London route opened flights to Cuba were suspended in 1961 due to the Cuban Revolution. With the London route, they became the third U.S. transatlantic passenger carrier after Pan Am and TWA. In the fall of 70, the first, the Boeing 747 jumbo jet, at that time the largest commercial airline, entered service with National on the Miami-New York nonstop route and the Miami-Los Angeles route. And in 1970, National Airlines opened their own terminal at John F. Kennedy International Airport, which was dubbed the Superdrome, or Sundrome, excuse me, Sundrome. And they placed an order for 10 aircraft back in 1969, the 747s. The wide bodies, DC-10s, was put in service on the Miami-New York route. And let's see what else we can cover here. In 73, the front cover of the airline system timetable proudly proclaimed National as daily stop, nonstop 747s from Miami to London. And they have another lots of connections using the 747 here. In 75, National was forced to shut down for several months due to a strike by the flight attendants. In the late 1970s, several airlines attempted to take over National Airlines, which had become a major player in the southern transcontinental Florida East Coast airline market. 1978, Texas International, which was led by none other than, we won't mention his name, anybody can say his name, but Frank, you know who, at that time, acquired 24.6% of the shares of National, but did not succeed in the takeover of National. A similar attempt was made by Eastern Airlines in 1979, and at the same time, the shares held by Texas International were sold to Pan American, who emerged as the White Knight and succeeded in accumulating a controlling majority. So, finally, the Pan Am acquisition of National was completed, and National now was no longer. It was now Pan American. And they continued the base, the maintenance base in Miami. And speaking of the maintenance base, we did mention earlier that they used to be across Lejeune Road, and they had to stop traffic by kind of like a train crossing highway, and the airplanes would cross. And I remember seeing those DC-7s and Connies and so forth that went over for maintenance over on the other side of the highway and then came back. But let's talk about a little bit. Either one of you know anybody? Did you know anybody with National Airlines?
I don't.
Well,
I did. I knew a lot of bunch of flight attendants back in the day. I can.
Okay, we won't go.
Wait,
oh,
yeah, there
we
is.
Won't go there.
Hey, we did have one guy named Jim Lauderdale, one of our pilots. He was in new hire class, and yeah, he worked in National.
Yeah,
he had. I remember that name.
Yeah, I remember
Jim Lauderdale.
When you said Jim Lauderdale, I thought of Hank Birmingham. You remember Hank Birmingham?
Yeah, I do. Henry Birmingham. Henry T.
Birmingham.
Yeah. But
But let me take you back to National. Huh?
Wasn't Lauderdale, didn't he become an instructor or something like that for a while, or Chuck Ehrman?
I think he did.
Maybe not.
Maybe
he did,
I don't
know it.
Yeah. I remember my first airplane ride, period. Commercial airplane, that is, because I was instructing at Tamiami Airport at the time. And we had a contract to train the National Airline flight engineers, because you remember the FAA decided that with the jet aircraft, all three crew members on the flight deck had to be pilot rated. And so it necessitated the airlines to send their flight engineers out for commercial ratings and instrument ratings. And I was working with Mary Gaffney at Tamiami Airport at the time, and she landed the first contract with National Airlines, and we got 25 of their flight engineers to train. And the number one engineer on the national system was I can't think of his last name now, but at any rate, it'll come to me. And he was the number one flight engineer. Well, he had his commercial and instrument, and he also had an instructor rating. And so he was helping to instruct the national flight engineers, and Earl Howe, that's his name now. And Earl Howe was the first engineer that National ever had, and on their aircraft equipment. So we became real good friends. He's instructing also with Mary on the side. And so one day Earl asked me, he said, Neil, he said, you want to take a flight tonight on a DC-8? I said, yeah, I would. I've never been on a jet airplane, and I'd never been on a commercial airplane. He said, well, you meet me out there at the airport, at the International Airport and National Headquarters in their office. And we're going to do a flight training on the DC-8. And he said, I'm giving an engineer a check ride. And he said, the captain is the chief pilot at National. His name is Skeeter Royal. And I said, oh, we got a Royal with us, too, there was another Royal with Eastern, excuse me. And his name was Thad Royal. You guys remember Thad Royal?
Yeah, I do. I remember the name.
Yeah, he was the director of training on one of the equipment, and I forgot with Eastern. But Skeeter was the chief pilot at National, and he was giving a captain a rating ride, and Earl was giving a flight engineer. So we met out there at 10 o'clock, of course, when all the flight training seemed to start, and I went through the briefing on the 8 and on the engineer's briefing with Earl. And we got up there, and golly, Pete, we did the steep turns. We did the stalls and falls. We did the slow flight. We did engine failures. And then all of a sudden, Earl says, now you're going to like this next one. He said, we're going to set up the captain for an emergency descent. And I he set the engineer, he gave him the checklist. They did the checklist on the, I can't control it, Captain, the pressurization. You remember we used to say, can you control it manually?
Oh, yes. And,
no, sir, I can't control it manually. It's climbing. So here we go. We're starting down on a DC-8. And he said, watch this. They actually use reverse power operations of number 2 and 3 engines on that DC-8. And boy, did that airplane come down. I think we were up at about 20-some thousand feet, but they just carried it down to, the level that you're supposed to be able to breathe oxygen. I think it was 10,000 or 14 to 10,000. And but that was very impressive. That airplane just rocked and rolled. I mean, it shook. I thought every rivet in the airplane would come out of the skin of that airplane. But that was my first ride in a commercial airliner, was with Earl Howe and Skeeter Royal. So that's my connection to National.
Well, did Earl Howe, did he have a son that was an instructor at Tamiami?
No, I didn't know that if he did. I was working for Mary's for about 2 years. And
Was been after you got hired.
Yeah. I then went over Bill Tersair over at Opa-locka, started the number one hangar there, and he asked me to be their chief flight instructor. So I went over with Tersair, with Bill Terso, who was the check captain for Pan American, and he started his own flight school when he asked me to help start it. So I went out and bought the airplanes for it, and we took it to to Eastern Airlines, and me and the vice president, Veronica, what was her name? But at any rate, she was Bill Terso's girlfriend, I guess. But at any rate, we went down and talked to the lawyer there on 36th Street with Eastern, and we got the first contract to train the first 25 Eastern flight engineers. And in that first class, we had some great guys that we trained, and I hired instructors, and Ken Knapp, I hired him, Gene Rosenthal, I hired him, and we had a little C3 simulator, not a simulator, but link trainer, and we operated that there at Opa-locka, and we did all that during the Cuban invasion, the Cuban Missile Crisis in 62. And so that was my connection with National, first with Mary Gaffney, and then, of course, Eastern. We got the contract to do the first flight engineer training with them. So that's about all I can say about that.
Do you remember training an engineer with National by the name of Don Bird?
I know the name, but I don't think Don was in that first class.
Okay. No, I don't know that he would have been in the first class. But he was the national engineer. I forgot about that.
Oh, national engineer. I can't remember. I remember Earl. I remember Nick Nicoletti, Brodsky. His last name was Brodsky. There were several of them. Larry Ligon. That was another engineer.
Don was the only one. Don was the only one that I knew that was. And he stayed an engineer. He never... He never upgraded, but he was had to go through the training. At any rate,
or he lost his job. Yeah.
Well, I think he was approaching retirement. I mean, he was a good bit older than I was.
Yeah.
I knew him even before I ever even started flying. So.
Yeah.
This is back in the mid '60s, but I did run in. I did run into him on a layover in San Francisco. I guess I was second on the 10-11 or something. I can't remember now. But anyway.
Well, here's a good one. I went to the memorial down in Miami of the 401 Memorial Monument that we placed there in Miami Springs. And I saw this guy that looked kind of familiar, and he had a walking cane. And he was under the tent. Of course, you know, they had the tent there. We had a bunch of people, over 100 people there, I guess, maybe 200. But at any rate, this guy looked very familiar. And as I passed him, I turned around and I said, "Don't I know you?" And he says, "Well, I don't know." I introduced myself. My name is Neil Holland. And he says, "Well, I'm Charlie Bible." And I thought to myself, Charlie Bible, my golly. Charlie Bible. Let's see. I believe his father was with National Airline. Captain Bible with National. And, oh, yeah, I trained you for your commercial and instrument rating, Charlie. He said,
"Well,
you did?"
Wow.
And I said, I did. So he said, "Well, I can't remember that." I said, "Well, if you want to, when I get back home, I'll look in my logbook and tell you when you got your check ride for your commercial and instrument ratings." And
in those notes, I mentioned to you that I knew Charlie.
Yeah,
and
that's right.
I was in the reserve unit with Charlie, and he was flying DC-7s out of Houston. He just gotten hired, I don't know, probably 2 or 3 years. He was only
Delta Airlines. Yeah,
about 22, 23 years old then.
And yeah. I remember him talking about there was only one person. That's what I asked you. There was one person younger than he was on our seniority list. And last time I would have seen him, I ran into him the Miami International. I guess he was going out on a nine trip, the ferry trip someplace. He was flying captain on the nine. And this is probably in the, I don't know, maybe mid-80s or something. But that said, and he had married a girl that lived in the same apartment building who worked for Eastern. She was in the flight operations office.
Yeah.
After they got married, I remember when we went over and had to get our pictures taken for that international crew member certificate, and she was working in the office. And I came across mine the other day. I still have it. But I didn't know whether they stayed together or not. I heard Charlie had bought a gas station. Oh, that's good. He bought a gas station or something like that years ago down South Miami somewhere. But he ended up, he made it to age 60 then.
Yeah, Charlie, he told me, I asked him, I said, why the walking stick? He said, well, I'm considered blind. I can see a little bit, but mostly shadows and silhouettes.
Wow.
And his wife did work for Eastern. She introduced herself to me. I forgot her first name. And she introduced herself to me and said she worked for Eastern. That's why she was at the dedication of the 401 monument down there.
Well, I wondered about that. When you mentioned that, I was trying to figure the connection, and I didn't realize that they have something in Miami Springs monument. Is that correct? Okay.
Because it's a beautiful monument.
I was interject some of those things. I don't want to clog your time and all, but I was on a trip that morning. We checked. I'd laid over in Atlanta that night on a 727, and we went to Dallas early. And I guess we checked in like 6 o'clock. Must have been and there was a teletype on the board about crew and the aircraft, and that night before when we had gotten in, they had some engine problems on a 1011 in New York San Juan or someplace, and I had heard about that before we went to bed, and then but the girls were talking about a crash or something with the 1011 in the Holiday Inn there on Virginia Avenue. Anyway, we went to saw the teletype, and we were going from Dallas, Atlanta to Dallas, and then Dallas back to Miami. And in Dallas, we picked up the senior flight attendant, whose name was Adrian Hamilton. She was the senior on 401. Her parents boarded there, and she survived. But when we came back into Miami, probably about 1 o'clock or something. And I thought they were kind of vectoring us a little differently, more so than direct to Miami, but whatever. As it turned out, of course, we ended up going right over the accident site, and I can't remember the captain, but I remember the co-pilot was Dick Trice. I can't remember the captain.
He was out at Opa-locka with me.
He was the co-pilot, and we ended up right over the site, and all during the we were listening to the Armed Forces radio getting updates on what had happened and 100 survivors, and we were trying to visualize what had occurred, and then just to go over and you see the picture of the tail lying there, we're about 1,500 feet and right over the top of that thing. And I thought, my Lord, how did anybody survive that? But that was something, because I knew Don Repo, and I know you did well.
Yeah. I didn't know him. I did not know Repo. I didn't know.
Oh, you didn't know
Don. I knew Bert Stockstill. I knew Bert, the co-pilot.
I knew Don. And, of course, his daughter was a flight attendant with Eastern, too, and she was a lovely girl, really a very pretty girl and nice girl. And when all that crap came around that, they were seeing the faces, and I felt so sorry for her, you know.
Yeah.
You know, and a guy writing that book about that, and how he was his wife was a Northwest flight attendant. He got the idea of the rumors are going around, and writes a book, and it became a movie and all that kind of crap.
Yeah. Yeah.
And every time I see references on the internet about it, and it just irritates the heck out of me.
Well, it was a tragedy, anyway. And all the airlines seem like they've had one. But it seems like a major airplanes, airlines have had major crashes like that. And of course, Delta had their 10/11 crash at Fort Worth. Do you remember that on a training flight?
Oh yeah, it's just. But you're talking about your first airplane ride. I can't imagine that, or your first airliner ride. But my first in an airliner happens to have been D-Day, 1944, an American DC-3 from Washington D.C. to Chicago with my dad, and I can still remember at 5 years of age. We lived in Alexandria, actually in Arlington then. And coming up in the Washington National, seeing the sun come up, and we probably left about 8:30 in the morning and stopped in Pittsburgh and Cincinnati, and it was probably 5 o'clock in the afternoon or so when we got into Midway, but he was from Chicago, and that was my first airplane ride.
Okay.
And I still remember snippets of it, and I was 5 years old.
Well, I'm going to ask Jim Harris, what was your first airplane ride, Jim? And incidentally, tell me first, and then I'll sing to you, Jim Harris, happy birthday.
Okay. My first airplane ride was on an Electra, and it went from Nashville to Atlanta. And that's the first time I've been on a commercial airliner like that. I remember it well.
Was it with Eastern or some other airline?
Yeah, it was with Eastern. I got to ride on a jump seat because I was going down. I was going to go down. I was going down for an interview.
Okay.
Which I got hired.
And that's the first time you'd ever been on an airliner.
Yep, that's right.
Yeah.
Wow.
In the cockpits, both of us in the cockpits, Jim Harris and I are about the same age. I got two birthdays, and I've explained it a million times on a radio show, but March 25th and then April 25th. And so, but today is his birthday, and the 6th of April. So he's the same age I am. And so happy birthday. I'm going to not sing the song. But just happy birthday, Jim. What's your wife got planned for you tonight for your birthday?
I don't know yet. Probably nothing.
And how old are you going to be, Jim?
88.
Same age.
Okay.
88.
I am. I refer to myself as an old fart. Which I am.
Well, are we all? I'm the youngster in the group, and I'm only going to be 85 here in September. So,
Well, you got a good memory, Jerry.
Well, you know, I remember things I shouldn't. should have, and I was always good at that. I could remember, football scores and crazy. I'm still a huge football fan. And I can remember, but I do. I couldn't learn anything, but I could memorize, I guess, pretty well.
Yeah.
But that said, I remember you talking about the Electra. I flew on a national Electra, and it had to have been – I didn't go to Miami until September 1960. So I was living in D.C. area, and my dad had business in Miami, and he said – I've got to go down and see this man, and actually he lived in Lighthouse Point, and the first time I'd ever seen a home on the water like that, and I'm like, oh, my God, what is that? But anyway, it was a National Electra, and so that had to have been sometime in either late 59 or early 1950, because I went down to Miami in September 60 to the University of Miami. I had started at the University of South Carolina playing football in the 50s and got banged up and went home for a while and ended up, I said, I want to go back to school. And they, my dad had, with two other men, had bought a house, one of those Mackle-built $10,000 homes up in Pompano Beach. I said, well, you can live there and go to school. So I did for about a week and a half, and they realized that was a long drive from Pompano Beach to Colgate.
Yeah.
So that didn't last long, and actually I got when I was at school and I needed a job and I was working and I was selling clothes and shoes and everything else, and he knew some people with Chase Manhattan. I guess it's through Chase Manhattan, and that was Eastern's primary bank in New York, and I still have a letter or something about. And it was like contacted somebody up there to get me an interview as a part-time agent because there were a couple of kids that were already working as agents at the university. Some of them got hired. Ron Vera, I don't know if you, I haven't seen Ron in years, but I don't know if either one of you knew him. But there were a number of agents that ultimately got hired. Phil Sybil.
Yeah.
And,
Phil Sybil was in my class. He was in my class.
Well, and you said Harry Pulaski. Well, I started in February 62 as an agent, and so Felix Carpenter and Boyd Connolly and
I remember them all.
They were all working as agents, and as I said, I never thought I could pass the Vicks. I didn't know what I was, 2040 or whatever, in vision wise, at least that, because I'd worn glasses for a long time, so I'd never even considered it. And when I got out of school, I was a sales rep in Manhattan, but I stayed in the Coast Guard unit, which Charlie Bible was in. There was Lance Anderson, who got shot. He wasn't an Easter pilot yet, but remember that deal where another pilot killed him?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, okay, that was Lance. And then Charlie was in there, and then Norm Anderson was based up in Boston. Anyway, they all got hired, and I won't get into it. We'll talk about
Jim
it
Duncan.
Time,
did you know Jim Duncan?
Who?
Jim Duncan.
No.
He was an agent in South Carolina, Columbia, South Carolina.
No. See, I didn't live in. I came to South Carolina with this job, but I was from Northern Virginia, but I didn't start with her. The only time I was with Eastern as an agent was always in Miami.
Okay.
But there were a lot of guys that, golly, they hired a whole class of, in April of 68, were nothing but Eastern employees. And then Borman stopped all of that. But a fellow named Larry Critcher, I don't know whether you knew Larry or not. We were the last two employees. He was in Miami Law School, and when I bought my airplane, he started flying with me, and he ended up going over to Africa and flying off. He flew U2 and Guns N' Roses on world tours, and he wrote two books. He lived down in the Grove, very interesting books about traveling. He went to 138 different countries and just flew all over the world. He was chief pilot, and it took some of the Eastern guys over there, and they were landing on dirt strips where guys were holding torches out there for them to land. And he stayed in 727s, and it's really quite interesting the stuff that he did after Eastern shut down. But anyway, he and I were the last two employees hired, and Borman came out and said, no more, and it has to be ex-military. And of course, that was the extent of that.
So you got on at 68.
I was the last 720. I was the last. I would have been a junior 720 pilot trained, and then I went from that first bid, and went back and got. I was on the Electra for about a year and a half on the shuttle, and then I went to Miami on the 727.
Okay.
In January of 71, I guess.
Yeah. Well, listen, it's been fun talking to you guys, and we talked a little bit about National, too. So I don't know what we'll do next week, but National, I never did apply with, I only applied with one other company, and that was Delta. And I applied for Delta, and they gave me a ticket to come to Atlanta from Miami. I had bought a house there in Miami Springs when my wife and I were married, and the broker, real estate broker that showed and sold me the house was the station manager for Delta in Miami. So I told him, I said, we'll buy the house under one condition. You give me a pass to go to to Atlanta to interview with Delta. So he did. After we bought the house, he gave me a pass, and I went up there. They were, at that time, hiring mostly just military pilots. And so at any rate, I came back and started training the flight engineers with Eastern over at Opa-locka with Terce-Air and most of those guys. As a matter of fact, Tom Lott, you probably remember Tom Lott.
I taught him
for his commercial and instrument, and he kept calling O.B. Bivens, and he says, O.B., he says, where is Neil's application in the stack on your desk? Where is it? And I'd be listening to the conversation there in our little flight school at Opa-locka, but he was bugging him because OB was his first cousin. They were cousins. And I didn't know that, but at any rate, I often think that Tom was the one that got me the job, but I had to go out to Seattle with Alaska Airlines, and Gene Rosenthal and I went out there to get our Constellation flight engineer ratings, and OB called me from while we were out there, and he said, Neil, how'd you like a job with Eastern? And I said, well, I'm with Alaska now and in ground school on the Connie. I haven't taken the flight training. He said, come on home. So Gene and I got back, and we were in the class in February the 2nd of 1963. And I loved it ever since. I mean, it's been my life, and I'm sure both of you guys, Jim Harris especially, tells me how much he thinks about Eastern every day, right, Jim?
Absolutely, yes, every day.
And the thing about it is, living here and not being around airline people, this is why I've enjoyed this conversation so much, because I haven't spoken with anybody with an Eastern Airlines in years. And as I said, my roommates are all dead. But I do have memories because of, especially from where I came from, I can still remember the day I went up the field, and as I was a rampage, so I was down, I wasn't at the ticket counters, and I'm glad because I got to be around the airplanes, and I show up and I've got a regular suit and tie on, you know, and somebody says, well, we'll go out and walk me up the back of the stairs and open the door, how to open the door of a 720, because they didn't have jetways, of course, in those days. And I thought, damn, I'd never seen airplanes or airliners or people like, you know, and the stewardesses were there. And I guess I'm 22 or whatever. And it was just, and I had never gotten over that feel and remember so much of it, believe me.
Yeah. Well, listen, I hear our bumper music about to sign us off here, so we're going to say goodbye for this week, and we'll try it again next week to see what happens. And I like this this song by Merle Haggard, Silver Wings. Take a listen to this, Jerry, as we sign out. And, Jim, you've heard it many times. I love it. Silver Wings.
All right. Thank you, Neil.
Yes, sir.
Fading out of sight.
Don't leave me, I cried. Don't take that airplane ride. But you locked me out of your mind and left me standing here behind. Silver wings shining in the sun.
headed somewhere in flight. They're taking you away, leaving me lonely. Silver wings, slowly fading out of sight. Taking you away and leaving me lonely. Silver wings, slowly fading out of sight.